This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Mark Kilsby,
Diane McConnell,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Mark, we've been talking about lots of things in your past, but you described your involvement with primary school pupils, but you were also active in Boys High.
Yes, yeah. It's the school I went to a long time ago. I was there from 1959 to 1964. So when I say I'm an old boy, I really am. When I retired, I knew Chris Burton, who is head of drama at Boys High, and he asked me if I would like to go along and assist with their senior production in some sort of capacity, and I was more than happy to do that. So they do a production combined with Girls High every year. They do a major musical. I was more than happy to help. Their first production that I helped with was The Wedding Singer. So my role was solely to go in. I wasn't involved so much in the early rehearsal process when they were learning the singing, because that's not my real forte. When they were learning the dancing, that's not my forte at all. So it was basically once they'd got the play up on stage and they were having running full-length rehearsals going from beginning to end of the play, looking at it from my perspective of things that weren't working, could I hear them? Were they speaking and then dropping off at the end of line so we didn't get the last word? Did they actually know this background of the story that they were talking about? Were they talking about some historical figure? Did they know that historical figure? Had they done a bit of research on that? So that was my involvement with that.
Had you done directing? So this was sort of semi-directing?
I have done a little bit of directing before, but I don't really enjoy the sole responsibility. I find it a bit overwhelming, but I'm more than happy to. I've co-directed, and I quite enjoy that role. I just don't like having the full responsibility. I've done that since 2007, every production that Boys I've had since 2007. And then I can't remember how long ago now, but at Boys High they have a junior musical theatre, and this is their way of upskilling the young boys, because the boys aren't allowed to be in the senior production until they're in year 11, pretty much. That's not totally, but that's pretty much the way it is. So they get a couple of years training in junior musical theatre. So junior musical theatre at Boys High, we rehearse Thursday mornings, and that's for about an hour and a quarter. And then in terms 2 and 3, we also do an extra rehearsal on Wednesday mornings, and that's also for about an hour and a quarter. And they do extracts from a production, from a major musical. Like last year, they did from a show called Big River, and they've done Newsies, that worked very well because Journey Musical Theatre did a production of Newsies, and then that was the senior production for the following year, you know. That so they Journey Musical Theatre finishes usually about October, and the senior production is in March. So yes, some of the boys moved on from the Journey Musical Theatre into the, but they didn't get the lead roles because from going the top of the heap they went to the bottom of the heap, as it were.
But you see them actually then progressing through the young schools.
Absolutely, and it's really fascinating. We'll get some of the students in Journey Musical theatre who have done some acting, but singing and dancing isn't their forte. But they think, oh, I really like this, so they'll go and get singing lessons, and you'll see, you know, their singing take off or their dancing take off. And I love working with, particularly. Look, I love working at Milson's, well, named the school now, Milson School, the primary school, and I love working at Boys High, because the boys that I work with start off as boys, but by the time they reach year 13, they've grown into young men. And the change that takes place in those years, you see them from becoming confident young men, and I find that really exciting. And then they're leaving to take their next big step in life as to whether they're going on. A lot of them do go on to uni. But that's one thing, there's lots of things I like about Boys High. I don't think I enjoyed it that much when I was there, to be honest. But that's another story that I might go into. But there's so many opportunities now at secondary schools. But what I also really enjoy, because I'm on the Facebook page of Boys High, and they celebrate the boys who get apprenticeships just as much as the boys who go on to uni, or they celebrate the boys who make a national team, and now many of them make international teams. That's mind-boggling, and the variety of international teams they make, and, you know, multitude of sports.
They talk a lot about New Zealand and an emphasis on sport. Do you find
as well as mentioning the sports, the people who excel in the arts are celebrated just as much. In fact, it was said that the boys who are involved in the senior production at Boys High were on the same level as the first 15 at Boys High. So, yeah, that's certainly not what it was like at Boys High when I was there in 1959 till 1964.
Yes.
And I wasn't well in those years, so school was a bit hard. And then my mum died while I was still at school. That was a bit tough. But anyway, that's how it is. And we move on from those things. Very important. So, yeah, it's lovely seeing these young men and watching them grow and develop. And this is what I was saying in one of the earlier interviews, how being involved in theatre gives these young men confidence. It's not just about the acting. There are many skills they learn that you know, serve them for the rest of their lives. And it's something they might never do again, or they might come back to, you know, when they retire. I think, I enjoyed that when I was at school.
We know through improv, there's the idea of you've got to be able to read the signals from other people and respond. Do you think acting helps people to see more in the people they're communicating with?
Yes, you read body language. It's interesting. I've just been working with one of the young men at Boys High, and he's plays the principal of the school, and he's a tall lad, and he seems to walk with his knees slightly bent, as if he's compensating, doesn't like being quite as tall as he is. And I said, no, you're the principal, you need to stride there and stamp your authority and stand as tall as you can with your shoulders back. You are the principal of the school, and you need to physically be strong. So I think they do learn to read body language, and this is one of my big things. And my part of directing with a school show, to be angry on stage doesn't mean that you just shout.
Yes.
Your body has to indicate that you're angry as well. So if your body is very loose and your hands are hanging by your side and you're supposed to be angry, I'm saying, no, you're not, because your body's not angry.
Facial expression, I suppose.
Yes. So these are some of the skills that they learn as they go through their involvement in theatre. So that's my work in the schools. My own work life, I started work with New Zealand Forest Service here in Palmerston North, And when you started as a junior clerk there, you had to start on records and deliver the records. When you talk about this, it seems so old-fashioned, great big files, wads of stuff bound up in pink tape to hold them together. And you had to shift them from office to office on a tea trolley.
Yeah.
And I had to go up in the lift, and one of the wheels was loose in the tea trolley, and it fell down the lift well.
Oh. So you're talking about 1964.
I went to uni for 1 year, decided at that stage that wasn't for me, so that would be 66.
Yeah. Okay. What did you start at
uni? I did English and accounting. Passed right. English, but accounting I flunked at. I don't know what you think when you're that.
I thought accountants
make a lot of money, and I want to do that. And I hate it, and I didn't enjoy it. What was I thinking? Where was I at? For heaven's sake, you know.
So, talk about someone decided he was interested in money, so I thought work in a bank, but found being near money didn't mean to
get money. Yeah, absorbing it. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I finished my time with as being the records clerk, that you're at the beck and call of everybody. Then I moved to different sections, and then I moved from New Zealand Forest Service to Ministry of Works in Hamilton. That stage, when you're involved with administration, you were able to shift from one government department to another because the administration systems were similar.
Able to or expected to?
Well, if you wanted to advance, okay, then that was the way
you had to do it. So
I applied for the other job, and got. There used to be what called the PSOC, the Public Service Official Circular, used to come out once a week, and everybody used to dive for this to find out what jobs were available, and then you had to fill out Form PS17A, or I think it was something like that. Handwritten,
so you
and send it off.
So you got the job sort of seeing a whole career path until retirement.
Yes, I stayed with the public service for my entire career, which was almost unheard of by that stage because so many government departments had evolved, devolved, disappeared.
Oh, of course.
Restructuring. I couldn't tell you how many restructures I went through, but I always seemed to... to retain a job. Only ever once did I have to sort of drop down several grades, and I ended up on a help desk, which I hated. It was awful, horrible. People shouted at you. Ghastly stuff.
Was that good training for your work with the vets and the doctors, though?
And having people shout at me. Not many vets shout at you. No. I advanced my way up in the public service. It was all on grades. I managed to make it to middle management, and then lost my job through a restructuring. Well, lost that particular job, and then sort of had to go to being on a help desk and better work my way back up again. However, I got to 63. And there was another restructuring was talked about, and I was going to end up with a job. I thought, I don't want to do this, and I can't face the thought of doing this 5 days a week, for 8 hours a day, or 7 hours 35, or whatever it had to be at that stage. And I thought, I'm out of here. And so I did. I think I thought about it in March and was gone by April. So, which was perhaps a little bit hasty. I should have spent just a little bit more time preparing for retirement, I think, and setting up things to be ready for when I retired. That didn't quite happen, but...
What would you have done differently?
I would have gone to the schools and said, I'm going to be available. Have you got something that you would like me to do, or can I help you here?
This was because of your ongoing leisure time involvement in drama.
Yeah. You know, drama's been an absolute joy for me, and I've managed to earn a little bit of money out of it as well, so that which has been, you know, a side bonus, as it were. I mean, if, I would have still done it without that, but you know, that's. But it's also given me some, you know, other interesting experiences. I've even compared a fashion parade once. I don't know whether many of the listeners know Ian Harmon, Mr. Lollar Illusion, here in Palmerston North. I did a show with him one year, and I did a couple of balancing acts. So I had to learn to do balancing between two chairs. That was some, yeah. So, you know, something you just pick up and learn how to do.
Useful skill.
Which proved very useful in my ensuing life. Absolutely. It's just, as you gain age, you need to learn how to balance.
Yeah, balance is important.
Very important. Yeah. But at this stage, I wasn't balancing on my feet. I was using my arms to balance with my legs out behind me.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, that was that. And I'm not quite sure how we got from what I was talking about to Mr. Lollar Illusion, but there we go.
This was your retirement.
That was in my retirement.
So how did you find the work in later life then? It got more interesting?
I don't know. I mean, you know, computers came in while I was in my work life. Great big clunky things they were with a huge back on them.
Yeah.
And all black and green.
Yeah.
What that did to our eyesight, even, who knows? Yes, yes.
So, was that, did you enjoy that change? Or just
well, it was fascinating, but I was at the stage because I'm not really interested. It was a tool to work, and I could make it work in that environment. But, you know, if something went wrong with our computers, you just phoned the IT section, and they came and fixed it. Yeah. I live at home now. I don't have my own IT specialist who's just on hand to drop by in 10 minutes to sort my problem out. That's very frustrating. So that's that part. I think I suppose when you perform a lot, I can't remember how I first got this particular act, but I was asked to do a thing called Nobody Loves a Fairy When They're 40 in a show, and I'm not a singer. Or wasn't a singer at that stage, so I had to sing as well. So that was a bit daunting, and I had to put on a fairy costume, like a ballet tutu. Well, it was just an act within a show that was made up of items.
Okay.
So it's a whole song. I mean, you can look it up on YouTube for people
interested. YouTube,
I'm not on YouTube, but there are many versions of Nobody Loves a Fairy When They're 40 on YouTube. Okay. And while it's very funny, it's actually quite sad because it is about the advancing years and what doesn't work. And
well, it says when something
you're,
as well,
when
40 is considered advancing years.
When you get to be somewhat older. But it was very funny. And what was really interesting was making it work that you drew in an audience that while they laughed, they also realised that it was actually quite touching.
Yeah.
And you would get an awe. And that's lovely when that happens because you know you've drawn your audience in and you've told the story as it needs to be told.
Yeah.
But having done it once, somehow or other people saw it. And so,
when you say once, you mean within
a show,
yeah.
And then I was asked to do Nobody Loves a Fairy When They're 40 for birthday parties. It's fun.
So
people say,
typecast.
Come and do it at my birthday party. Oh yeah, all right, that'll be fun. And, we're going to do it in 10 minutes. You know, I need to have time. Because I had to get in this tutu, you know, and it's not.
Yeah.
I wasn't used to getting into a tutu.
Yeah.
I'm not a dancer, as I said before many times.
And
put on the wig and the wand and all that paraphernalia, my wings. And you think, oh, this 10 minutes is taking forever. Oh, well, there's been a bit of a delay, so here you are in this, you know, it's a cold night, and here you are in this room that's not heated, a flimsy fairy costume. Hurry up.
Is it a New Zealand thing for men to dress up in tutus and fairy wings and wigs and stuff?
Haven't you been to any drag performances? This is common.
When I came, I saw South Island Farmers. They've got some sort of function, and yes, there's going to be a group of them as ballet dancers or something.
There's almost a history here in Palmerston North. The Massey students, when they used to do, now what do they call it, Capping Week?
Mm-hmm.
And they would do a show in Capping Week, and there'd always be a male ballet in that, where they would be in tutus. So yeah, it is. I mean, it's, you know, from the sublime to the ridiculous, that sort of thing. As I say, there's nobody loves a fairy when they're 40. It just had that sense of great humour in it and telling, but also that resonance of drawing the crowd and saying, yeah, you know, it is sad when your wand is withered and your wings refuse to flap, when you can't cast a spelling, and for years you haven't told a fairy tale that's, I can't remember it all now. I remembered part of it, so that proves I haven't got dementia. There you go. So anyway, but I did it many, many, many times, but I came, and it used to be quite physical, so I would do my own version of dance steps and that sort of thing. But I can't do it to that sort of level now, so I don't want to do it again. And I've told people that, because people remember it. Funnily enough,
for all these things you've been around a lot? I notice when you turn up on stage, even if it's only for a small part, the audience seems to erupt, as if you're so well known and they're just waiting for you to come out.
Oh, I think they're just applauding and saying that'll be the end of it, and he'll get off soon. Yeah,
might be his last chance, so he
might cark it while he's on the stage. So you better let him know. give him a clap. So there you go. So that's Nobody Loves Fairy when they're 40. Often in plays we will have very quick costume changes. So you have to learn techniques. You have to be very careful with your costumes. Put them in order that you're going to need them. Make sure the cuffs of shirts are not all tucked in. Trouser cuffs are not turned in on themselves. All that sort of thing.
You get help with costume
changes. If there's some really quick costume changes, in big shows, you'll have a dresser that will assist you. And most of the times, they will tell you, you stand still and do nothing. When they tell you to put your arms up, you put your arms up. When they say step into your trousers, you step into your trousers. And you will go basically with a mini rehearsal with them to get that timing right, to find out what order you need to do it in. And you have to be strategic. Sometimes you can put on a set of trousers that are needed in the next scene, and then you put the trousers required in the first scene over the top of that. So it's just a matter of then of ripping off one pair of trousers and then the next pair of trousers are there. So, you know, you're all set to go. And I always remember a guy in Wanganui, David Smiles, who'd been an actor for many, many years. He'd say, people say, I haven't got time to do this costume change. And they'll moan and groan. He says, at the end of the season, they'll be able to do the costume change and smoke a cigarette in the interim. he was never very sympathetic to people who said, I can't do this costume change. But, you know, that's not quite true that they had time to smoke a cigarette, and nor would you be allowed to now anyway. It makes you really plan and sort things out so that you minimise.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, as you're doing your lines, they become more familiar. So, you know, in early days of rehearsal, when you're running the play, the director will say, now we need to shave 15 minutes off that. And you'll think, oh, yeah, that's a big ask. And usually by the end of the play, you can shave for 15 minutes or 10 minutes off. Just because the lines become quicker, that people don't finish their line and the next person is thinking, oh God, what do I say now? They'll have their line ready to come in. Your next line should be starting virtually as the last last syllable of the previous line as being said, so that the dialogue, unless there is a definite reason for a pause, and often the pauses will be written into the writer will have written pause in the script.
So a lot of it depends on the directors, doesn't it?
Oh, the director. Yeah. Most directors are pretty collegial, and will say, if you have any ideas, bring them to me. But at the end of the day, the director is the person for whom that he is responsible for the play. So at the end of the day, you have to say, I mightn't agree with it, but they are the director, and I'm only looking at it from my perspective as the actor. I don't see the overall that he's seeing when he's watching everybody on the stage. I'm doing big hand gestures here, audience, which you can't see. So, talking of quick costume changes, I'm in a play called Bullshot Crummond, and I played five different characters in that. So I had some, and the first costume change was most probably the quickest. I don't know how many people are familiar with the Globe Theatre here in Palmerston North, but I came off what, from the audience perspective, would be the right-hand side of the stage, went off there at the end of one scene, raced round backstage, and came on the other side of the stage in a new costume. So I had a dresser running with me at that time. And virtually as I walked on the stage, they were pulling the previous pair of trousers. Well, you could virtually see them trailing off into the wings. I think that's the quickest costume change I've ever had to do. But there were a variety of characters. I had to go from being Bullshot Crummond's friend to a policeman to a Russian heavyweight, me at nine stone. that's when you have to call on all your acting skills to become a Russian heavyweight. Or an East European. I don't know whether it was a Russian accent, but it was sort of East European. And Bullshot Crummond is sort of a spoof on B-grade movies. So that was almost part of the spoof, that they ran out of money and my character. So this person had to play five different roles because it saved on hiring another four actors. So, yes.
Thank you for listening to Manu 2 Conversations. Today we've been talking with Mark Gillsby, who has plenty more to say.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu 2 Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu 2 People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu 2 Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.